having a harder time getting out of bed these days?
So for me, the hardest part is always getting out of bed in the morning and getting on with my day. It's pitch black, your alarm goes off, and your first thought is, not today, Satan.
So that's TikTok user Chloe Biohacks there talking about seasonal affective disorder, or SAD. And with daylight saving time ending this weekend, that means sunset, by the way, at 4:31 p.m., it is the focus of this installment of Be Well, where we talk about your health and ours. So joining us now, Michelle de Blasi, Dr. Michelle de Blasi, psychiatrist and chief of inpatient patient psychiatry at Tufts Medical Center, and Howard Brown, social worker with the Boston Public Health Commission, who works within the Boston Public School System. Michelle, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you. And Howard, welcome to you here in Studio 2 as well.
Thank you very much.
So I want to set the table here. According to the American Academy of Family Physicians, about 4% of Americans have severe seasonal affective disorder, or SAD, and as many as 20% might have milder forms. So, Michelle, let's just start with the basics. What exactly is seasonal affective disorder?
You know, seasonal affective disorder really is when somebody gets depressed, and it's based off of a seasonal pattern. Typically, it happens late fall to early winter, when you start noticing that every year you seem to get depressed, have increasing fatigue, trouble concentrating, feeling more hopeless. So it can last too for the whole winter time, so up to 4 or 5 months.
So I want to clarify there, too. You're talking about depression, clinical or diagnosed depression here, Michelle. I don't want to make light of people who have a little bit of winter blues. I think many of us do. But we are talking in this case about a seasonal actual depression that coincides with it getting darker, et cetera. Is that right?
That's right, you know, but not to say that some people can't, you know, have a more milder version as well. But, you know, there's a whole range of severity.
And I do want to take this point to say, if you or a loved one is having a mental health crisis, there's a resource available to you. It's the Suicide and Crisis Hotline at 988. Again, you can dial 988. So, Howard, I want to turn to you.
Yes.
We are so aware of increasing anxiety, depression among kids, especially coming out of COVID. Talk about the added aspect of seasonal affective disorder. Is it something we see in kids and young people in our schools?
Well, it's something that we certainly have witnessed. The times often when we have students coming in and talking about feeling sad or being depressed, that can be a variety of things that are going on. And also one of the things to keep in mind with SAD is that it's described, I think, in the ICD as being a recurrent depressive disorder, meaning that it comes and it can come and go on a certain degree of severity, almost like on a spectrum. So for some students, there may be a variety of things that they're dealing with. I think when the seasons change and they are exposed to the change of daylight, et cetera, that is just one more thing among a series of things that can affect how a student is feeling or a teenager is feeling.
And an ICD is basically a classification book of illnesses, right?
It's an international category of disease.
Classification of diseases, I think. Yeah, thank you. So I want to bring now, we reached out to our listeners for their thoughts on seasonal affective disorder. That's people who joined our texting club. And if you would like to join our texting club, you can get started by sending the word Boston to 617-766-0382. That's 617-766-0382. Michelle James in Gloucester wrote, "I find pathologizing language harmful here. We aren't disordered for feeling sad when it's dark and cold. It's hard." So does he have a point, Michelle? And what is the conversation you want us as a psychiatrist to be having around seasonal affective disorder?
You know, I think that's right. I think, you know, oftentimes we do have sort of a tendency to sort of over-pathologize things. But I think the point is when you're starting to get to the point where you're so depressed that you're really not functioning, that's really where it's most concerning. You know, when you're having trouble getting out of bed in the morning, maybe even having thoughts of suicide, those things absolutely need to be addressed immediately, whether it's going to the emergency department or talking to your doctor. But it certainly doesn't discount that there is a range, you know, of mild to severe. So if you're feeling depressed, you should be reaching out, you know, to your provider to try to get checked out and get assessed.
We're speaking with psychiatrist Michelle de Blasi of Tufts Medical Center and social worker Howard Brown of the Boston Public Health Commission in our Be Well segment about seasonal affective disorder. So, Howard, you talked about the complicating factors that kids might be facing. We had another text from Jane in Scituate who asks, is there any correlation between folks who have seasonal affective disorder and folks who have difficult relationships with the holidays due to various family traumas, dysfunction, et cetera? Can you talk about that complicating factor?
That is a very good question. And I think it's, again, one of those multiple layers that we deal with. I think for many people, the holidays can be difficult, either due to family dynamics or they lost someone recently. I mean, especially with the pandemic, with having lost so many family members, the holidays can be difficult. So it's one of the many things that seems to be layered on when someone's feeling sad. It's not... It becomes a challenge for people just to be able to get up and move around and do things. And the holidays certainly do add to that.
So, Michelle, let's start talking about how to help. If you love someone that you think, whether it's a young person, Howard, or Michelle, an adult, somebody who may be experiencing seasonal affective disorder, what's the first step to take?
You know, I think the first step is recognizing that there's a problem and then reaching out for help. So whether, you know, that's to your primary care doctor or your psychiatrist or somebody, you know, that you're working with, your therapist, to let them know that you're having trouble. I think the first, you know, step is to make sure that there's nothing medically going on, you know, that, for example, checking your thyroid to make sure you have good function there, checking your vitamin D levels, because those can lead to signs of depression. So those are sort of the biggest first steps of what to do.
And Howard, you know, I'm mindful that with kids, and I guess I'm thinking about adolescents because mine are closest to that age, but kids in general, they may not tell you what they're feeling and they're experiencing, and they need the help of adults. So if you've got a parent or a teacher who's listening to this and says, I'm concerned maybe there's a kid who's experiencing depression that's seasonal here, how to recognize those signs and how do you approach a kid?
Well, one of the things I think is important, the advantage of working in a school system is that students over time will recognize who you are and may approach you on their own. It's excellent that staff are willing to I've often had staff come up and say, look, I have a concern about this student. Can you meet with them? When they come in and they meet with me, it's very, I treat it as being not informal, but very relaxed and give them an opportunity to talk. Most students are very good about that, especially if they think it's not going to be shared with the general public. Confidentiality thing is pivotal, especially in a school environment where everybody knows everybody else. So it's not unheard of where numerous people in many of the schools I've worked with in the past come to me, anything from the administrative assistant to the principal to teachers to the students themselves to friends. And I think that's being based in a school has been a great advantage. Sometimes the kids don't know what's going on, why they're feeling this way, and it's a chance for them to just kind of process what's going on. I often say to them, I don't have the answers. I just ask the questions, and working together, we'll figure that out and then take it from there.
So, Michelle, I'll come back to you as we talk about seasonal affective disorder here on Radio Boston. So we've talked about the first step. Are there any steps people can take for themselves, whether it's fitness or it's their exposure to light or it's hobbies or, you know, what steps can people take to try to mitigate the effect that this change in season, especially this darkness that we have here in New England, where I understand seasonal affective disorder can be a little more prevalent? What steps can people take at home?
Yeah, I mean, I think actually all of those things you listed could potentially be helpful. I mean, in an ideal world, right, we would be able to go on vacation or, you know, potentially even move to some of the lower latitudes where there's more sunlight. But, you know, that's just not always feasible. So doing things like, you know, trying to stay active, exercising, having a healthy diet, like I said, making sure you have a normal vitamin D level. Those are going to be really important things. You should also consider talking to your doctor about potentially getting a light box. So if you can't get away, they do sell light boxes. which you use pretty much 30 minutes in the morning, and is basically a simulation of light that can help with this. But again, I would talk to your doctor first before, you know, going ahead and purchasing one of those.
And our producer, Sydney Bowles, looked on Amazon, for example. Those prices can range anywhere from $30 to $300, mm-hmm. depending on what you get. Howard, any additional thoughts on how to stave this off or help support yourself?
Well, I think it's important to reach out to people that you feel care for you and be supportive. It's also, it's interesting because I just had a conversation with a school nurse early today about the idea of try to utilizing light boxes in the school for students who feel that they may benefit from it. In some countries, they have light rooms. Scandinavia, I think, is big on having light rooms for students. But I think emphasizing that this is not a negative, as in there's something wrong with them, letting them know that it's okay that this is what's going on, but to get help when they're out there on their own. I think for some students it can be pretty difficult because they may not be able to differentiate between what might be a symptom of SAD versus what's going on at school. But you also have to keep in mind we're talking about adolescents who are developmentally going through so many changes.
Yeah.
And with all those changes, you pile on SAD, you pile on the challenges of school, and you pile in the results of what's been going on with the pandemic. And not every adolescent's going to have difficulty, but there are going to those who are going to have some challenges. But I think it's important for them to recognize that that's, for lack of a better description, normal, and that there are people out there that can help them.
Last thoughts from you, Michelle de Blasi. And we know it's a thing. We understand now better how to recognize the signs, that it's seasonal, what some of the home supports might be. Your last thought for people?
You know, my last thought for people is just reach out for help, you know, to your loved ones, to your providers. Don't be alone in this. I think a lot of people can feel really isolated and just feel really alone. And I think that's the key thing, is reaching out for help. And so that you can start to feel better and not feel so isolated.
All right. Michelle de Blasi is a psychiatrist and chief of inpatient psychiatry at Tufts Medical Center. And Howard Brown is a clinical social worker with the Boston Public Health Commission, who works within the Boston Public School System. Michelle, Howard, thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And again, if you or a loved one are experiencing a mental health crisis or suicidal thoughts, you can call the National Suicide and Crisis Hotline at 988. That's 988. And we always want to hear from you, whether it's Be Well or other segments. If you haven't joined our texting group yet, please do. I'd love to hear from you. You can get started by sending the word Boston to 617-766-0382. That's 617-766-0382.